the Jewish people were in the Exodus, traveling into the Promised Land, they encountered, many, many pagan nations. And so too, when Christianity began and we went out and started preaching the good news of Jesus Christ, we encountered many, many pagan nations. And a lot of those pagan nations were filled with gods and goddesses. For those of us aware, in Rome, we have Roman mythology and the story of all of their god and goddesses, or Greek mythology. And even, when they came and brought the good news to the American, our Native Americans, they found in these cultures, people who believed in many different gods. Because from the very beginning of time, that humankind has sort of found that things that we could not understand, things that we could not explain, that very often we would sit there and, form a god who would sort of be in charge of it. Some gods were good. There would be a god of prosperity, a god of good harvest. But there's also some that were evil. The god of hurricanes, the goddess of of tornadoes, the goddess of floods. And so because of that, that a lot of times is that in dealing with these gods and goddesses, is that they would sit there and develop rituals or practices. On Tuesday night, we have the traditional sort of celebration of Halloween, in which we sort of remember that tradition. As many of the pagans would look out and see the end of, the crops would be dying, the days would be getting longer, is that they felt at this point that a lot of the spirits, this was sort of the closest time between the spirit world and our world. And so because of that, that a lot of times that they felt that the spirits were active and alive, both the good spirits and the evil spirits. And so they began to learn to placate that. Now, Christianity was very good at coming in and stealing, not necessarily stealing, but taking sort of practices or traditions that were happening and sort of changing them. And in about the 8th century, that prevalent at the end of October was a pagan feast called something like Samhain. But it was a celebration of the end of the year. And because of that, it was a pagan celebration in which, that we sort of remembered things that were dying and those who have died. And in light of that, that they had so many people who were celebrating this, is that they took it and they said, okay, on the 1st of November, that we're going to celebrate the feast of those who have died and have gone to heaven. And so they developed the Christian feast of All Saints Day. But let's go back, to dealing with, Halloween. Now, as they were dealing with this, a lot of times, there were a lot of good, like I said, good spirits and evil spirits, but they felt that a lot of people, especially in Ireland, some down in Africa, and even sometimes in our own native cultures of Native Americans, that the spirits are very prevalent at this time of year. And so they found ways of sort of protecting themselves from the spirits. And what they would do a lot of times was is that they would dress up as monsters, as scarecrows, as evil people, so that when the evil spirits that were, they felt very close, would come, they would see them and they said, well, you're just like one of us, so we're going to leave you alone. And we're going to go away. And so the idea of dressing up for Halloween comes from a very tradition of sort of protecting us from evil. Protecting us. Also, another thing that they would do is that they would leave out goodies so that as these spirits would come, they would see these goodies and they would take them and they would leave that house alone. They would leave those people alone. Also, a lot of times is that the fellows that, the spirits would dress up and they would come to a house begging for food. And if you gave it to them, you would be blessed. If you did not give it to them, then you would be tricked. That they would sit there and do something against you. Today, on Tuesday, is for witches and warlocks, and they do exist. If you're a Harry Potter fan, of course, you're very well with the whole idea of magic. But yet, that today we have witches and warlocks among us. They're not so much instruments of the devil, as you are instruments of nature. That they believe in nature. They believe in the good and the evil. And sometimes, that if they come to know, nature well enough, is that by doing certain rituals that they can sort of control nature. I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's what they believe and they were doing. And I remember when I was in college, in the seminary, we had a couple of witches who came and talked a little bit about their culture and their nature. So they're doing this. So the whole idea of Halloween, while some Christians see it as very evil, it's very non-religious, and yet where it has sort of a religious root, a Christian root. It's a way in which we realize death is part of life, and to protect ourselves from evil by doing good and by putting on a costume, which for us is putting on Christ or putting on the saints. On Wednesday, we celebrate the Feast of All Saints. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of what it takes to be a saint. But over in Rome, there's this official, this is office. And all this office does is basically make saints. That in the church, there is a canon of official saints. St. Mary, St. James, St. Jude, St. Peter, St. Paul. Most recently, we got Mother Teresa, and Pope John 23rd, John Paul II. I'm sure some of the modern saints. And the idea is that they look at the people's lives, and they talk to people who have known them, if it's recent, and they determine whether, that this person really lived a holy life. And as you looked at their lives, one of the things that you really noticed was is that most of the time is that they never thought their life was good enough. They could always be better. they weren't quite holy enough. You know, they always felt that, you know, somehow as if they could be holier. And I think that sort of speaks to us. Because all of us realize, especially Father Randy keeps telling us, you know, how many times that we feel unholy, that we're not worthy. We're not holy enough. And that's the aspect sometimes of a saint. We have that in common with many of our traditional saints. So they look at the saints' lives. If they determine, you know, well, okay, that this person may be eligible for official sainthood, then they go to a state of naming him blessed. And in order to become blessed, they say you have to have three miracles attributed to that saint. Where somebody prayed to God through the intercession of this individual, and something miraculous happened. Now we talk about magic. Miracles are magic. Somewhere, something happens that we have no natural explanation. A person with inoperable cancer all of a sudden comes out and the cancer is gone. Someone who's supposed to live 4 weeks lives 20 years. So they find three of them. Once they find three of them, then they become, they take the next step towards sainthood. And you have to find three more miracles. Three of them. And when they finally find the sixth, they find that this person has been in the process is that you have somebody who's sort of saying, if this was a good person, and then you have somebody who says, no, they're not quite good enough to be official. And yet, you know, when they verify it, and they come to the conclusion, then that person becomes an official saint, and they're given a day of the year in which we celebrate their life and their sainthood. The thing is that on November 1st, we celebrate those very special people who have no special day. People in our life, in our community, our children, our parents, our grandparents, people who we feel led not a perfect life, a good life. Vernon, my daughter Katie, Henry, Mark and Angie's child that they've lost, and others. That we truly believe that they are with God and within heaven. And so, on the Feast of All Saints, we celebrate them. We celebrate their life. Glenn, Bob Smith, Vernon. And so it becomes a very special day in which we remember them. And then on Thursday, we have a celebration of the Feast of All Souls. And that's for those who are still in purgatory. Now, when I was growing up, I learned of purgatory as purgatory was just a place just like hell, which is fire and brimstone, except somehow you knew that you were going to get out. And I remember, you know, that when you committed a sin, you got so many days in purgatory. If you got committed a mortal sin, you went straight to hell. Okay? But if it wasn't a mortal sin, okay, you went to purgatory, and if you lie, you might have got a day. If you sort of, you know, robbed a bank, you might get 5 years. And it was very much like the Penitentials. As a matter of fact, there was a book where confessors would use, in which, you know, you would go to confession and they would look up, okay, you know, if you got this sentence or this, it's how many days, you know, that you're going to spend in purgatory. And then on the other hand, we had prayers. Okay? At Hail Mary, that was for 2 weeks. The Apostles' Creed, that was worth, you know, Rosary, that was worth a month. Indulgence, that was a whole year. And it was very much a balancing act. They can take your sins, how many days you have, they can take your prayers, and they can give you a penance to sort of make up for it. Now today, we don't really believe so much in purgatory as a place, at least I don't. And yet somehow I know that when we die, we're very imperfect. We're very much still, you know, centered in this life and the things of this world and in the people of this world. When we enter heaven, we're perfect. So somehow, between our death and entering heaven, there is a perfection process. And this is what I like to think of purgatory. And in the communion of saints and in the church teachings, is that we, who are still living, have an opportunity to help those who have died in that process. For those of you who are familiar with the light, it's sort of like, you know, you see this light when you're getting in, like a lot of times, you know, the story of, you know, people who are dying and they see the light. They see the light over here, and they see the family and the things of the world back here. And they have to make, you know, that movement towards the light. They have to turn away from the things of the world. And sometimes the holier you are, the better life you live, the easier it is to go forward. The much more difficult life you've lived, it's harder. You want to turn back. You want to go back to the life that you have. And so in our belief is that all the prayers that we offer on behalf of those who have died, I pray daily for my daughter, my parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, relatives and friends, deceased members of St. James Parish, my father-in-law. Knowing that, you know, my prayers, you know, do play a part in that role that they have. But sure, I'm sure that they're in heaven. But yet, you know, the prayers that I still offer now help them and touch their lives. And help them in that process and are important. When I was a young boy, there was a custom in the church on the feast of November 2nd of All Saints' Day that if you went to church and said six Our Fathers, six Hail Marys, and six Glory Bees, you would help somebody to get out of purgatory and into heaven. And my grandmother was a very holy woman. She went to church daily. And on November 2nd, she pretty much lived to church. The thing was is that you could only get one person out for a visit. So on that day, you would go to church, you would go in, you would say your prayers, you would walk outside, you would come back in, and start over, go back outside and come back in. She would pray for, first of all, the family, friends that she knew. And then she would pray for the persons closest to heaven. And then she would pray for the person farthest away from heaven. And that was her routine. And I remember her story of one night on November 2nd, she went to bed. And about 11:30, she woke up, and in the room was a young girl I was about 16 years old, standing about 2 feet off the floor with the most beautiful smile. And my grandmother felt great joy and peace. And she was there about 10 seconds and disappeared. You may not believe that, but I do. And she felt there was probably somebody who nobody else was praying for that maybe she helped to get to heaven. And so as we celebrate these 3 days, Tuesday with our kids and trick-or-treating, even though a lot of it's going to be done, you know, today and tomorrow, and sometimes on Tuesday, remember, you know, I sit there and, you know, that there is good and evil in the world. And to help with the good and to protect us from evil. And on Wednesday, to remember all those that we know who have died. And on Thursday, to remember those and to help those who are struggling to get to be purified and to pray for them. God bless you. And may you have a very beautiful and blessed day. For the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.